Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? Welcome to episode 169 of Waypoint Radio. It is July 13th, 2018. How are you doing today? It is Friday late. This is maybe the latest we've done a podcast in a long time.
Months.
E3, you're right. Last month.
E3 doesn't count, though. This is pretty bad for a Friday.
I like to have these done. I like to, this part of my day should just be me being just like, I'm chill. I'm going to take care of some paperwork for the end of the afternoon.
Ooh, treat yourself.
Treat myself.
Go get some paperwork. Always chill.
I'm going to go get some Twizzlers. I have been working on some paperwork, and it sucks. But other than that, it's Friday, and that's something to be proud about. We made it through another week. How are y'all doing?
Well, I wasn't indicted today by Robert Mueller, so whew. Made it another week.
Patrick Klepek confirmed not to be Guccifer 2.0. Or is he?
Is it Guccifer or Guccifer?
Rob and I had this conversation right before we streamed
yesterday. I've heard it as Guccifer most of the time.
See, I say Guccifer.
Guccifer sounds like a hip-hop artist that I haven't heard of.
So I said Guccifer earlier, and Rob and Kato both looked at me and were like, excuse me, it's Guccifer? And I was like, oh yeah, because Gucci, that makes sense. But I guess
it sounds bad.
It sounds bad. Guccifer also sounds bad.
It sounds bad. It sounds like a children's book character.
But doesn't that fit like a shitty? I guess he wasn't a bad hacker, but like you know what I mean.
Like, his name is more.
You know, that seems like you're gonna fall on the line of like the lamer version of the name.
What's wild is that it was 13 people, right? Guccifer ended up being 13 people, and the wildest one that I just read, maybe this was you who sent it to me, Patrick, was that they had set up a fake Act Blue account, or not account, a fake Act Blue site that was soliciting donations to them, you know, from Democratic donors, and they somehow got the real Act Blue site to redirect to their money pit
I think it was they changed the hyperlink on the like Democratic National Committee site or the DCCC.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. So they didn't change
actblue.com. They just changed like the forwarding link. And then probably scooped up a bunch of credit cards in the process.
God damn.
DCCC just winning on every front, really.
Love it out here. Just winning so much. Obviously, those are the voices of Patrick Klepek and Rob Zachney, who are here today to talk to me about the latest and greatest in video games and Russian hackers and political probes and... you know, did y'all go back and watch any more of that that ridiculous kangaroo court yesterday?
I saw some clips.
There are some clips out there.
Trey Gowdy's bad, but Trey Gowdy's been bad for a long time. People just are paying attention now. People tuned out the Benghazi circus as that went on for three or four years. But yeah, Trey Gowdy, like a defender of the truth, like motherfucker. go back and see what he was stringing along for a number of years there. So long.
Okay, so we got that out of the way. We got our brief delve into the political circus of the week. But I feel like we have also had our own drama inside of the game sphere. Unsurprisingly, runs pretty cleanly parallel to many of the other ongoing battles in culture throughout the rest of the world, which was kind of a continuation of the ArenaNet stuff, More conversations around the conversation that we had on Monday around the firing of Jessica Price and Peter Fries from ArenaNet. If you want to hear us talk about that and you missed that Monday episode, maybe go back and listen to that before we go forward. So more interviews there, more examples of the effect that this has, that those events had on encouraging more shitty harassment and similar calls for the firing of people who have done pretty much nothing at all and don't deserve it at all. And then today we had a wrinkle to the kind of meta conversation because this morning – was it this morning, Patrick?
Last night, I think.
Was it probably last night?
Roughly while we were sleeping.
Gotcha. The original creator of Kotaku in Action, a subreddit where Gamergate and its kin collaborate on – Reddit and plan out, you know, social media harassment campaigns and share information about people and just generally make the lives of lots of folks, especially women, people of color, and other marginalized folks in the games industry and anyone who takes social justice or who takes equality seriously, their targets. The founder of that subreddit shut it down overnight. And then this morning or today, after being petitioned by some of its other admins, Reddit reopened it, but not before the founder made a post over on the drama subreddit that was kind of laying out in – laying out is maybe even too
– No, that's like too generous because
it's too generous.
It's a lot of words that say very little.
Yeah, yeah. What was your phrase there, Rob?
Dumping.
Yeah, dumping, just like...
Here's some shit.
Yeah, I did this.
Do you want to see like someone write a lot of words but actually say like very little? Like it is probably what, like, I don't know, 1,000, you know, 1,200 mm-hmm. words, but what could be summed up in like a sentence or two. But
yeah.
If you write a lot, well, gee, it seems like you put a lot of thought into it. But when you actually read what he had to say, or they, I guess I shouldn't be presumptuous, but... there's very little substance to or self-examination in what they actually wrote.
Exactly. I mean, so you just finished writing a piece about this. It's up on the site. It's called "The Creator of a Gamergate Subreddit Deserves No Credit for Deleting It." Do you want to dig into this a little bit, Patrick, and give us some context besides just what we just said?
Yeah. So sort of saw this kind of circling around on Twitter this morning. Originally, I was like, oh, maybe I'll write a just like a quick news piece about this because like this fits within our wheelhouse and this seems like something that we should, you know, have up on our community so people like kind of know that it's something we're paying attention to and you know, it kind of puts our sort of like foot in the ground for future stories or podcast discussions. And then as I was writing like the first paragraph and I was actually reading what this person said, like it was just infuriating because like the crux of the argument made by the creator of Kotaku in Action is that I created this thing, it spiraled out of control over the last 4 years. The rise of Trump and the power of like the Donald, which is like more or less like the Gamergate equivalent for like Donald Trump's superfans on Reddit, has shown to me that like this stuff is out of control and, you know, it has to be tampered down. And I should have done this a long time ago, but I'm turning off Kotaku in Action. And what bothered me about it was, one, it's like wholly disingenuous about how Reddit works, which is he knew full well that right. The way ownership works on Reddit is that, yes, you own it. But Reddit has a specific policy that if a rogue mod or owner, you know, does something to an active community, Reddit can step in and restore it and swap the ownership privileges to someone else. So by saying like I'm shutting down this toxic thing was not true. Like it was offline for 45 minutes to an hour based on what I can piece together. And then Reddit stepped in, and specifically Reddit, it's not like an automated thing where like, oh, boop, like we're going to pop this back up and flag it. It's like Reddit made a explicit choice. Like someone went in and said, ah, this should be saved. This is a community that we want to continue. And then B, I was really taken by the lack of self-reflection.
Right.
Because like his post is predicated on that I created Kotaku in Action and then it went wrong. Which
right.
presupposes there was nothing wrong with the creation of Kotaku in action. And Kotaku in action, like, was a place that was explicit in being a breeding ground and a community for people who were sympathetic and active in Gamergate, a hate movement that was built explicitly on gaslighting and lies regarding the relationship between a media company and a game developer. And so there's no reckoning with that in the piece whatsoever. There's no, like, there's this whole, like, thing at the end, like, oh, you got to vote. Oh, like, you know, you should donate your money to Indivisible. It was like, good. Those are both, like, great things. But
sure.
He doesn't outline, like, actually, I was a bad person when I made this. Actually, when I created Kotaku in Action, I didn't realize the consequences for the women, the people of color, other marginalized folks that were going to use this as a way to get together and harass people. Like, actually, when I did all this, the grand mistake was making it because it was built on a lie. Like, it was built on a foundation of sand, and he doesn't reckon with that at all. And so that's what ended up being this piece, where I just kind of, like, break some of that stuff down and, talk about things about, like, the sort of the media's reaction to Gamergate. But it just really drove me up a wall to see all sorts of people, like, there were plenty of, like, good news reports that were summarizing what was happening, but there just wasn't enough analysis of, like, well, don't give this motherfucker credit for something he doesn't deserve any credit for. It's 4 years later. This is, like, a month later.
His framing of this is, like, I created Kotaku in Action thinking no one would join, and when I awoke, I had many hundreds of orange reds. Wow, WTF, did I say or do that caused this? KIA began. And then, like, down 300 words or whatever, there's a subsection called hate, which is, like, after a few months or whatever, this was a dark time. We were wrestling with how to control hate speech, not only what was said, but what people could link to. KIA became infested with racism and sexism and other isms, though many isms are not real. These are all quotes from David-me.
So even there, of course,
it became infested.
Many isms aren't real.
Uh-huh.
Remember,
it gives up the game. Wink, like, right there is like, oh, actually, I agreed with the lie this was built upon, but so then the whole thing falls apart. Because then what are you actually apologizing for unless you're doing the thing that these crowds always are you virtue signaling? Are you just out, you know what I mean? Like, you're doing
all of that shit.
Well, and, like, even at its most, like, and I'm using the word, like, it's an imperfect word, but it sort of describes maybe the mental state this person was in. At its most idealistic, what Kotaku in Action was going to be was always going to be the two-minute hate center for, like, reading articles written from marginalized perspectives or promoting, like, greater equality, diversity, or flagging social justice issues. It was always going to be. That was its whole purpose.
Right.
Was basically to point a finger and be like, look at this bullshit. Doesn't that piss you off? What the fuck what the fuck is this doing in my games? That was it at its least offensive.
Right.
That was the most harmless thing that site could have been. What the fuck do you think that thing is going to turn into? Like, when you woke up that next morning and you had all these people, like,
but this
when
is
you
the
created
thing.
2MinuteHate.com,
right.
What, like, and tons of people start, like, flocking to it, what do you imagine is the draw?
I don't want to just, like, linger on this guy forever because this is one of those situations where it probably is I don't want to, like, give him more of a platform than he already has as being this thing that's already been written about a bunch of, you know, and it's worth talking about that this happened, to be clear. I'm not saying we shouldn't be talking about it, but I think that there's a version of this post that at least says, here's what I thought I was building. Here's why I built it. Here's what I believed. And it, you know, it was about this thing or that thing, and here's how it started to get away from me. Here are beliefs I had then, here are beliefs I had now, that would at the very least be useful, functionally useful for us as media critics to look at and go, okay, this is this one person's perspective on how it got from point A to point B. But because their version of events is completely absent any sort of detail onto the ideology that work, into the specific material, like steps that were taken to bring more people into the fold, into some of the rhetoric that was at use there, like, there's nothing to take away from this thing to learn anything. And so it's frustrating to see people say, like, well, good on him for trying to shut it down. Cause it's like, no, like, that's not even a thing. There's not even, there was no chance that was going to stick. And where, you know, this is someone who could have left us with some pretty useful information at the very least. Instead, we just get this sort of like self-backpatting, you know, grandstanding, righting a wrong.
Like, if you wanted to release transcripts of like the origin of like some sort of insight into like the way that these people actually talk behind the scenes, which we know is coded much differently than the public face. Like Kotaku in Action is a cleaned up version of 4chan and Kiwi Farms. So like was the worst acts of harassment and targeting by Gamergate, did they come from Kotaku in Action? Like hard to prove, right? But it's much easier to look at like, you know, 4chan and Kiwi Farms where they don't try to cover what they're doing. They are just open. There is no coding. It is straight up all sorts of the worst possible things
right.
you
There's
can
no
imagine.
There's no dog whistle. There's not even
Racial language, they just say the slur, you know? Like rather than saying like we should reach out to this person to talk, they're just like, we're going to target them and harass them and like try and find their family's phone numbers, you know? Like,
right. Yeah. Right. Kotaku in Action is basically like the Federalist or the Daily Caller with links pointing to or community members who will point you the way to Stormfront. Right.
Right.
Like that's
right.
Basically that's the front office. It's the
Oh, the Federalist is very good. What a great comparison.
Good pull. So I guess for me the there's a bigger question here, which is or not a bigger question, but there's this ongoing conversation. The ArenaNet stuff, I think for me, for you, for other people I've seen this week, has felt like a major echo of Gamergate, which again, a hate movement that in many ways pre-existed its own naming, both literally and figuratively. This kind of collection of malignant, regressive forces, given flesh, people who deeply, deeply are fearful of change and who are skeptical of outsiders changing things and are, you know, proponents of gatekeeping and keeping things the way they've been. That existed in gaming for a long time. But Gamergate certainly felt like it coalesced into something potent and deeply harmful. And here we are. It is July 13th of 2018. We're 4 years on. The conversations have been about, in the last couple of weeks, whether about the arena that stuff or other things, hey, here are things that are comparisons you can make between Gamergate and the rising alt-right movement. Here are comparisons to make between Gamergate and members of the Trump cabinet, obviously. Direct connections often between people in these circles. And here is this event, the ArenaNet firings, that felt like it was catalyzed to do all of that again and to send us even deeper down, in our little corner of the world at least, the rabbit hole of hate groups and of harassment, of doxing, of all the stuff that will eventually kind of echo out into the rest of culture through the production of actionable ideologies that get people like Donald Trump elected, that hurt people very specifically. And my big question is, like, what do we do this time as we start to see these things differently or happening again? What do we do differently to get in front of them and prevent that sort of cascading effect? And again, I'm not saying Gamergate is why Donald Trump got elected. I think it's an overdetermined, super complicated thing there, but I'm not going to deny that
it's indicative of the culture.
Yes,
right? Like
exactly.
It's Gamergate was useful rhetorically because it crystallized into this, like, near physical thing, a group of activities that were happening all along.
Right.
And so in terms of being able to explain to people, oh, like this thing, you know, this thing that's been happening to all sorts of people for years and years and years, both on and off the internet, but especially on the internet, oh, Gamergate is a like way of like, I can point you to this and give it a name as opposed to something a little more malleable.
And materially, Gamergate was a testing ground for all sorts of behaviors and tactics. And I'm not saying that it would have been the only, they would have found a testing ground. They would have found a place to recruit young, angry white dudes from. This was the place they found,
Gamergate
and this
was
is one
Spain.
Of the, right, exactly. Yeah. And so here is the question: if is the stuff around ArenaNet, if not now, then eventually we will have another thing in this space as big and terrible as Gamergate, where people's lives are negatively affected, where lots of people want to, like, sit tightly to the center and say, well, you got to hear both sides. Hey, they were very rude, and not be willing to take a hard stance. What do we as people, you know, on this podcast, but also listeners at home, what are some, like, thoughts for them as we move towards those potential events?
I mean, I have less clear responses for sort of, like, the average person. Like, I think of it more for my role. Like, one thing I noted in my piece was that I think there has been much more clear-eyed reporting about ArenaNet and the consequences surrounding that. There has not been a lot of, like, for lack of a better word, like, video game centrism or both sides-ing. It has been a lot more of, this is what happened. This is, like, in very explicit terms, and not spending a lot of time airing out the grievances of the other side. It's very much front and center with what this thing is. And I think that is in no small part to the fact that there are a lot more women in high profile places of reporting. Like, that was a huge problem the first time around, especially at media outlets where, like, women were predominantly a minority. That is still true. It's just less true now. And I heard all sorts of explicit stories where it was just like the women were causing a fuss, wanting to put out a statement. Causing a fuss is a poor phrasing. What I mean is they were making valid points about trying to they wanted their outlets to make a statement. But the men in power were just kind of like doing the centrist thing and like, let's see how this thing pans out. Oh, but if we make a statement, you know, we're going to get targeted too, which, like, look, motherfucker, like, white dudes, is, you might get some shit in your mentions, but like, I'm not saying white dudes don't get harassed, but like,
well, there's a different degree of skin in the game.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, like, as a reporter, like, it is encouraging, as someone that learned a lot from Gamergate and has tried to apply that going forward, it is being clear-eyed up front about that, like being straight-laced about that up front and trying to do that as soon as humanly possible and trying to avoid the trap of, like, waiting to – not that you don't want all the evidence, but, I guess it's just to try and cut through the bullshit. Like, journalism – when you go to school for journalism, and that – a lot of reporters in video games didn't go to school for journalism, but still, like, there is, like, this hear both sides, like – journalism 101 sort of practice, and that comes from this didn't totally exist in the past, but there was a prior time when there was more good faith actors on both sides. That side does not exist, and so you can't apply the same tools and the same logic when the other side is twisting that to their gain. And that's what they did in Gamergate, was they twisted people's desire to think that there were good faith actors on both sides when really there wasn't, and they use that to their advantage to kind of stretch that out and give legitimacy to their platform. So for me, for reporters, for critics, it's to just be upfront about that and to get your platforms, like your publications, to be upfront about that and to not have it only exist on Twitter, like have it exist on your publication in a way that makes a strong statement, whether it's through reporting to analyze what's happening at these places. There are different ways to do this. It's not all just like an essay that says, like, yo, this stuff is shit. Like, there are different ways to approach this. Like, I think The Verge has done really good reporting on this from a cultural angle that both denounces it, but it often does it from a very deep reporting perspective about what's happening there. So that's where I come from, at least from my angle on this.
Rob, do you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, lots of them, Austin. I think a lot about the reactions I've seen to what happened to Jessica Price and the way things unfolded at ArenaNet and sort of some of the conversation stemming from our show. And I guess the thing that still concerns me is that I still see whatever that nugget of resentment or feeling disrespected by people you perceive as elite, I still see that out there and flourishing. Like, I see it when I see people really dedicate themselves to proving why a woman who just one day had enough of this shit on Twitter for 1 minute on a fucking vacation, why a woman in that position deserves to get fired, and why she should have gotten on her hands and knees to apologize if she was serious about saving her job and if she felt bad enough about what she'd done. I have a lot of questions about the kind of people that invest themselves that much in like parsing that and making that case and restating that case and basically trying to prove in some like, you know, objective fashion that we can all agree on that this was someone whose career deserved to be just get completely fucked up and deserved to be publicly humiliated by the man in charge of her company.
Right.
Like, that concerns me greatly. And I think maybe to tie it back to what we were talking about a minute ago, you'll note that even the KIA guy's post still has this, like, weird directionless anger floating through it, right? Like, his turn to the left is as directionless and unfocused as the turn toward, you know, bigotry and fascism was in 2014 or whatever. It's still this, well, now I'm still pissed, but now I'm pissed at the Trumpers and go to Indivisible. People, I think, are sitting on a, like, there are a lot of people out there who I think are nursing a lot of petty or undirected grudges about feeling like they're taking part in communities or societies that just don't give them a seat at the table, don't listen to them, don't care about them. And they want somebody to be held accountable for that. They want to see somebody get fucked up over that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part of ourselves that we've got to, and like, I have that part of myself, but that's the part of ourselves that we've got to wrestle with. That idea that on some level we are owed a fucking apology for people who have no, who have no real connection to us, who are are dealing with their own struggles, are bringing their own perspectives. But I still see that feeling that people acting on their lived experience, people having feelings about the ways they are treated, when we imagine ourselves in the position of the person being maybe in one moment disrespected, or the person just being told to shut up, or the person whose conduct is being questioned in articles about social justice movements. Until we wrestle with that part of ourselves, it will keep being weaponized against us. It will keep being used to mobilize us against our own interests. And that's the thing that concerns me that I've seen in this last week. It's still there, and people are still really quick to fall for the same trick.
Yeah. So one of the things that I do my best to focus in on here is, you know, there's the Nietzsche quote, distrust all men in whom the impulse to power to punish is powerful. They are the bloodhound and the hangman or whatever, right? And like the part of me is the person who still wants to punish, right? And who says like, yo, fuck those people who start harassment campaigns. They should not be in the positions that they are in. Some of those people have well-paying jobs and are in, you know, high places inside of our industry. And the thing that I need to focus on is not that the thing that I do my best to untangle is whether I'm interested in punishment or in a material change of the circumstances. And when I am the latter, what is that change? And so when I say something like, I think that it's fucking ridiculous that prominent people in the esports scene will not come out and openly say that this is not a space for homophobia or for homophobic slurs, and that we shouldn't be putting people who are willing to use homophobic slurs in front of cameras, that isn't about the punishment. That isn't about the whip, right? It's about creating a space where more people can come and flourish. And when I say that, you know, Scott Pruitt in the EPA should lose his job, or when I say that Scott Pruitt should be berated, or not Pruitt now, obviously, but when I say Mitch McConnell should be berated in public, it is not simply because I want Mitch McConnell to feel awkward. It's because I believe deeply that that is a step towards some goal, some change, some material change in the way that our society works. Now, I'm not saying that the people who create doxing campaigns and who create harassment campaigns also don't have an end goal. I'm saying that their end goal is bullshit. I'm saying that, like, they are not under attack in the way that marginalized identities are. I'm saying that they already have mobility, that they already are served, that those are people who – people deserve happiness. And they have access to it if what their concern is that they want video games that do X or Y or Z. Those X and Y and Z exist already. The introduction of new products to the video game marketplace that have, you know, women characters, the introduction of women to Battlefield 5, right, does not actually hurt them in any meaningful way. It does not deny them access. Or if it does, it only denies them access because they are misogynists and because they are so put off by the vision of a world in which a woman is standing next to a man and is equally capable, that they could not access that work. And at that point, I can't help you. And so that is how I do my best to entangle that stuff. But I think that that's a wise thing to suggest, Rob. I do think that, like, we do need to be more than just angry at a thing. We do need to be more than just furious. We need to untangle why we are so angry and then move with anger often in ways that are productive towards righting the circumstance. That is my I found a line, thank God. My head has been – I have been tangled on this all week because I know I've been angry.
Do we have – I don't think any of us have really touched on, like, what do we do? Like, we're in a different position, right?
Yeah.
Like, critics, influencers, journalists, whatever, you know, pick your word. We are in a position to do more than the average person because, like, we help set the tone. As a collective as much as I mean as individual. But, like, what do we tell people who is, like, the average person who is just as upset and confused and angry and their 6 Twitter followers, you know, echoes into the void, but they want to do something? And so, like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to work through For folks like that, I mean, I wonder if it's more like trying to find positive ways to help and lift up folks more than trying to untangle the negative stuff, right? It's like supporting people, like marginalized folks on Patreon. It's
$3 a month can do more than you think.
Maybe you can't do money, right? This is something that I've said for years, and I tell people that you like their work, like, especially folks who are. Well, one, people who even you would consider big like ourselves, like, I still, like, get really happy when people tell me they like the stuff that I do. But, like, specifically in a I'm in a really cushy position, right? So, like,
you have healthcare.
I have healthcare. Like, I have a great salary. Like, I'm good. But I still like hearing that people like my work. But for folks that, like, are in those other – for the folks who are, like, specifically targeted by these people because they don't have the same safety net, because they don't have the same financial assurances. They may not have the same social network. And I mean that, like, in the – like, the physical reality and also, like, their friends online. Like, I don't know. Like, those are the people. Like, if you read something about them, if you saw a YouTube video, like, even if you can't give them money or they don't have something like Ko-Fi or whatever set up, like – tell those people, like, their work is important. Tell them you want to hear more from them. Because especially when you are down and out, when you are starting, when you are not getting paid any money for the work that you do, like, that has currency and, like, that has value. And it's like, those are the voices that are going to help us get on to the other side of things. Like, those are the voices that we need more of. And so, like, at the very least, like, find those people, follow them on Twitter, share their stuff.
Share their
stuff,
tell them
that you share it. Tell them that you, like... It's the same way that when folks ask, like, how do you break into games journalism? It's like, well, go email, like, an indie developer who's got, like, 2 reviews on Steam and tell them you want to interview them. They're going to want to talk to you because they're excited to talk to anyone. So, like, a new writer, someone starting out who doesn't have, like, a huge base, like, they're going to be excited to talk to you about, like, what they're working on, what they have to say. And they're going to be engaged and they're going to build off of that. And so, like, find those people that you appreciate, like, lift them up, share their stuff, back them financially if you can. Like, those are, like, positive steps you can take, even though you don't have necessarily a lot of, like, cultural cachet in, like, you know, the video game criticism community. Like, those are active steps you can take that will make people's lives better. And it doesn't necessarily require you to, like, figure out what we do about fucking libertarian Reddit.
Yeah, I agree with all that. All right, we should take a quick break and come back so that we can put an advertisement in here if our algorithmic ad sales person has sold an algorithmic ad. Maybe you'll hear me talking about Google. Maybe you'll hear me talking about, I don't know, maybe you'll hear Rob talking about glasses.
Maybe if you're in Germany, you'll hear a questionable ad that we have to take down later.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll have to do that. Fuck. All right, we will be right back.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
All right, we are back now, and we should talk maybe briefly about some video. I have to complain about some bullshit. Can I complain about some bullshit?
What have the last 25 minutes been?
That was complaining about some real shit.
Okay, all right, fair. Please.
I sent to a chat that I'm in last night. I sent the following message. Galaxy Variant S, which is the new...
Oh, here we go.
Uh-huh. Okay. The new Nintendo Switch version of Galaxy the Dimensional, developed by Gung Ho Games. It's a mobile... There's a Galaxy...
It's a Switch port of the mobile game.
Of the mobile game, which also
this
only just came out
here.
Yeah, I'm this whole thing. I'm just I'm
Galaxy
listen, I,
2016
Galaxy the 2016 mech slash space fighter love letter to old anime. Galaxy Variant S is the twisted monkey paw wish result of everyone who said I wish Galaxy wasn't proc gen and had distinct levels and permanent upgrades and was easier to control. You can't transform between a ship and a mech. They removed a key movement type, side boosting, by making the levels smaller and handcrafted. The limits of the environmental art assets are felt even harder. Also, it has a lot of mobile game progression stuff that's been done better elsewhere.
And I was in this chat.
Yeah, you were.
I'm like, why do I know these words?
And it doesn't feel like making a cool ship or mech. I'm so fucking upset about this because I liked Galaxy, or the original game, quite a bit. I think it has its issues, and I fully understand. Okay, for people who don't know what Galaxy is at all, it was...
It's like 3 years ago now, right?
Yeah, I reviewed it. It was my first review at Giant Bomb, I think. 2015. August 10th, 2015. 3 years ago. It is a pretty difficult kind of side-scrolling, but like a 2D top-down view of a spaceship that can turn into a mech. It's a roguelite. You explored environments and fought bugs and space pirates and the evil empire, and you went on. It was run-based. You kind of went on runs, and every time that you died, you had to start over. It had like just a fucking gorgeous aesthetic, just beautiful. And it looked like Macross or Robotech, or, you know, kind of a 80s style.
The VHS artifacting on the cutscenes and menus was something else too.
Unbelievable. I mean, like it was a game that would come up with fake episode titles every time you started a new episode or a new, mission. It like generated it, and also not only fake episode titles, fake, writer titles for each episode. Which is a very nice touch. And this game has none of that. It is, like you said, the mobile port of this game handled by a different company. And it's so frustrating because that was a game that had, if nothing else, had a lot of style. And this is just so drab. It's free to play, so you know you can check it out for free. But it's just... What I wanted most of all from that game was a sequel that brought... it to people, brought it to other people and gave other people the joy that I got from it by maybe producing something that was a little bit more like what they wanted. And instead it's this, and it's just a bummer. This is the second, this and New Gundam Breaker in the same month are breaking my fucking heart, y'all. I'm sorry. This is, I have to complain about mechs. That's it.
Look, this is the price you pay. You got Battletech. It was good. Sadly.
Unfortunately, the rest of my mech games... No, Into the Breach. I got Battletech and Into the Breach this year.
It's been a pretty good year for mechs.
It has been a good year for mechs. It's just...
That
I wanted
been
it
to
be...
the year of the mech, damn it.
Right, and now Mech Warrior 5 is out next year? Come on. They didn't even show that game that takes place in the Front Mission universe at E3. That'll probably be at TGS.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a frustrating thing. It's an interesting thing because I think the model is what's interesting partially, which is they released this game. It doesn't do as well as they'd hoped it did, presumably. I don't know what the sales did on. That's completely me supposing, right? And they license out the game to Gung Ho, a mobile game developer. And my literal only hope is that the team at 17-bit is off making something really dope right now using the money that they got from licensing it. It's just, here's the last complaint. It's like canonically, it is like canonically a sequel to that game. Like the events of Galaxy.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah. So the events of Galaxy.
For the people out there who are like, all right, I need that story to pick up.
We are trained. I need it to pick up in a mobile game. We are like, so, Austin's about to start his petition. Like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm making my own sequel. And it's going to be the real version. And the mechs are going to be awesome. And they can transform and transform whatever you want.
Do you understand how ridiculous it is that the mech can't transform? That you have to pick either a fighter or a mech before
it's
you.
It's like that mechanic is like one of the. It's the mechanic.
Yes, it's the mechanic. Yeah, it picks up after the DLC of the original game. It's unbelievable. Oh, it's weird. It has all sorts of free to play stuff. It's fine. It's free. Don't dump money into it. If you want to check it out, check it out. Don't dump money into it. That's my non waypoint this week, I guess. Don't pay money for Galaxy variant.
Maybe
S.
We should do that every once a month.
Once a month.
Anti-waypoints.
Yep. Anti-waypoints, exactly.
Oh, important note. Hold on. Remember that Ancestors Legacy game I was talking about like ages ago on the show? Yeah. Okay, so get this.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of games that, hey, don't fuck with this game, or I retract even mentioning it. So Ancestors Legacy, you know what I didn't put two and two together with until somebody brought it up on Twitter? That's from the Hatred dev. But turns out Hatred is not the worst game that developer has made.
Oh, the no. Wait, I didn't dig deeper into this.
No.
Uh-oh.
The worst game they made, I think, is something they call like IS War or something like that. But it's basically ISIS is sending tons of terrorists to Europe on migrant boats. And you're one brave Western warrior with a machine gun. And yeah, so it's exactly what you think it is. And the head of this company's gotten hot water because, like, on their Facebook, they liked basically a Polish fascist party. So, returning to Ancestors Legacy for one second.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the language around this game now, and boy.
Yeah. Now informed by that context, Ancestors Legacy takes on a rather different cast. And so does its title, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And it's also, like, a really mediocre game. But the main point here, though, is, fuck that developer. Like, literally everything they touch has basically been toxic. And it's so funny that, like, I got a lot of, like, normal-ass-looking and sounding PR emails about it that, like, never brought up this developer's track record at all. I should have fucking Googled it. But they so, like, background the history of this company.
Yeah.
I got a key in the mail. I was like, fuck it. It's an RTS. I look at those.
Totally. This is the line that I would raise my eyebrows with, given this context. Especially given the context of the game in which you shoot people. The one that you just described, whatever it was called, ICE Defenders. IS Defenders, right? Or whatever.
I don't know. I'm not going to look it up.
Anyway, this is from the press release for Ancestors Legacy. Hello, Conquerors. It is time to remember our ancestors, to realize and acknowledge where we're all coming from and what our forefathers did to ensure our place in the world is secured and safe. You guys didn't hear me whistle because I was a higher pitch. It was a dog whistle, is what I was making.
Is that
how
that works?
Yeah, you couldn't hear it. But
so you say something and then someone stands behind you with a whistle.
With a whistle. That's it.
Shit.
All right. Well, that's the second anti waypoint. Patrick, do you have an anti waypoint for July 13th, 2017?
I don't have anything off the top of my head.
What about the...
Avoid the Reddit.
What about the deep nest?
Oh, you know what? Okay, so... Okay, this is not an anti, nor is a pro, but this is breaking...
Oh, I see how it is. A little fence sitting, a little centrism from
Patrick
Hunter.
Well, you can choose...
Uh-huh.
You can choose your side.
Both sides have some good points.
Well, okay. So, Alien Colonial Marines, bad game. I saw a demo for that at a PAX years ago, and it looked incredible. Like, the famous demo that a lot of press came out of, and were like, going, ah, this game actually looks, like, pretty awesome. And then it came out in the game, like, I'm sure you've seen GIFs and, like, videos of, like, the aliens just, like, standing around and, like, not doing any, like, it didn't make any sense why the game was as bad as it was. So, this broke while we started recording this, but someone found out a new update will be coming soon with this change included. However, getting reports back from several players on how much this affects the games, I had to post it now. Basically, there's a line of code in the game called attach pawn to tether.
And then I'm looking at it.
And if you it's a typo, and if you change it to, if you take it, so it's written in the code as tether, as in T-E-A-T-H-E-R. And if you change it to what it should be, like when it's tethering something, like the AI is tethered to something, it fixes a bunch of shit in the game.
Right, like, because this is the code for, like, attaching an enemy to something it's tethered to, presumably, like a character that it's trying to attack, or a piece of cover in the environment, or the ceiling, or something.
And so, a lot of things, I played like an hour and a half of that game. There are things beyond that that, you know, just did not make Alien Colonial Marines a good game necessarily. But, like, that is fucking wild.
God.
A typo has been found 5 years later by, like, I've been wanting to write about this for a while. There is a whole scene of people that have been trying to take Aliens Colonial Marines, like, the structure of it and fix it. Like, the idea being, like, oh, there's enough bones here that we can actually make something interesting. Like, especially because the art assets are, like, really incredible. Like, there's stuff here that, like, maybe we can do something with this because we don't have the money to do all the stuff that Gearbox did from a production standpoint. So there's been this whole community trying to improve this game quietly in the background for the past 4 or 5 years. And then some of those mods have involved, like, trying to fix the AI and trying to do the pathfinding.
This is just in any file.
And then
to just find out
a fucking typo.
In a file you can just open. It's not even deep in the code.
It's an any file.
It's an any file. So this is from the post on Reset Era. There's a post by Jiggles Bunny, and then they're quoting someone else inside of another community. Attach pawn to tether does a lot. It controls the tactical position adjustment, patrolling, and target zoning. When a Xeno is spawned, it is attached to a zone by a tether. It's attached to a zone tether. This zone tells the Xeno what area is its fighting space and where different exits are. In combat, a Xeno will be forced to switch to a new tether, such as one behind you, as to flank or disperse so they aren't grouped up. Whenever the game tried to do this, nothing happened. Now it does.
So the person writes in here that they did it to their copy of the game, and it says, the improvement is immediately recognizable in your first encounter with the Xenos. While they still charge you perched on their hind legs, they now crawl far more often, flank you using vents, and holes in the environment are generally far more engaged and aggressive. 5 years after release, a single letter managed to overhaul the entirety of the enemy behavior in this game.
What if it's not a typo? What if somebody was just like, tether like Heather?
Yeah, tether like Heather. Tether like Heather. Tether like Heather. Tethered like Heather.
Oh my god. Also, though, how quickly did everyone just walk away from this burning wreckage of a game?
Nobody ever fixed that or caught it.
You know what, though? I bet, one of the things I'll be curious about, as this ripples out and gets shared, here's my guess is we will find out all sorts of situations in game development where there have been things exactly like this.
Yes.
Like, my guess is, like, small, like, innocuous things in code or whatever have, like, great ripple effects that people look back and, like, thousands of man hours were spent fixing something that was actually, like, you know, as simple as moving a block, you know, over to some other thing or whatever. My guess is this is not unique. This is obviously, like, this is supposed to be caught, you know, like, this is indicative of, like, a poor, you know, a game shouldn't have shipped like this if there was something this simple. But my guess is in actual development before a game is released, this is probably more common than we think. So that's my, I'm not saying you should go play Aliens Colonial Marines, but I'm kind of thinking maybe I should play Aliens Colonial Marines.
Waypoint 101, Alien? No, we're not. We're not doing that. We are not. We should try to figure out a Waypoint 101 sometime next week, and we'll let people know about it.
After Riverdale,
I promise.
Of course.
We should do something with Riverdale. There's a lot of people who want to talk Riverdale with us. I'm not rewatching Riverdale, but
so we
I could
hit
talk
it while it's fresh.
We got to hit it while it's fresh is the thing. So maybe we do like a quick burner 101 yeah. on Riverdale.
Just two, 3 hours. Got it.
Oh, my God. We're not.
Well, we're only doing one, and you want to hit the entire series to date. I mean, there's so much.
Send us your Riverdale thoughts. You can send us all questions to gaming@vice.com. That's gaming@vice.com. Send us your Riverdale thoughts. What is this website? I'm Austin Walker. You can find me.
I was
going
to say, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter @Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
You can find me @PatrickKlupik. Not looking at my Twitter mentions for the next 48 hours.
Yeah, good luck, homie. Rob, what about you?
@RobZachney.
There it is. Follow everything Waypoint does, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice. You can also follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/WaypointVice, and, of course, twitch.tv/Waypoint. Shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at B-O. Nope, not B-O. Just go to B-O. Just go on the internet and type B-O and see what you find. Waypoint.zone/B-O-E-N. It's Friday. We're all going home. Go pick up your daughter. Patrick, that's for you. That was just especially for you.
That's right. That is what I have to do.
Yeah.
That's good.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Danielle isn't here, but I'll say it. Be good and be good at it.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.